Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. My name is Molly McLaughlin, and I own a company that optimizes sleep through technology, accountability, and behavioral change. Each week, I'll be interviewing world-class experts ranging from doctors, innovators, and thought leaders to give actionable tips and strategies that you can implement to become a more skillful sleeper. Let's jump into your dose of practical sleep training. Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. Today's episode is all about respiratory training. Did you know that there are actual devices that you can get to help with this area? I was turned on to this company, PN Medical, that creates a device that does exactly that for pretty affordable rates. And I learned about them through XPT. They are an extreme performance training company started by Laird Hamilton, renowned surfer, and of course, breath. When you're surfing and finding yourselves underwater at any for an extended period of time, often the ability to modulate your breath becomes a very important and sometimes life or death matter. So they take this element really seriously of their health. And so when they did recommend this product, I was all ears. So I'm excited to share with you my conversation with the chief scientist there at PN Medical, and where they get into the weeds on the ability to improve your relationship to your respiratory system through just daily practice with this device. Now, a little background. Nina Bozak is a PhD, serves as chief scientist of PN Medical, and is part of the PN Medical Science Board of Advisory. A graduate of the University of Vienna, she developed her scientific and leadership skills during research and teaching positions at the University of Oxford, UK, and the University of Sheffield, UK. She's also co-founder of Loft for Life, a European startup company supporting respiratory health in performance. Now, let's dive into all the great details that we go into around the ability to impact your respiratory health. And of course, as we know, that will weigh very heavily on your results with your sleep and how rested you feel in the morning. All right. And welcome to the Sleep is a Skill podcast. Thank you so much, Nina, for taking the time to sit with us and go over this really interesting connection for many people of how understanding training our respiratory system can make a difference with our sleep. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, awesome. So I'd love to, we got a lot of ground to cover today. And so what I'd love to begin is just understanding a bit about your origin story as to how you got your way into this area, why you're passionate about it, and why you believe that this can make a difference, particularly right now in the time of that we're at during COVID and what could be possible about out of what you are researching and a part of.
Sure. I'm actually coming from a slightly different background. I'm a geneticist.
Yes.
So, and then about 5 years ago, I started to change career because I've been in science for long enough. And at some point, it is time to get out and do something else and kind of do something in the real world. And got in touch with PN Medical. They are the makers of the Breather, which is the respiratory muscle training device that we're working with. And I started working with them 5 years ago. And initially, it was just like a little bit, Mark Carboni, the owner, asked me to just kind of do a little bit of, what literature is out there? What's the evidence behind training respiratory muscles? Is there anything that's out there? And actually, there is a ton of research out there, why it's good for you, how your breathing muscle works, how your breathing muscles are actually like your other skeletal muscles, how you can just train them like you would train your biceps or something, and then what it does to you as a person, to you as an athlete, and to you as a patient. And, once I started digging into this, I was fascinated about how it works, how much it can help, and how overlooked it is, because it's such a simple method. It can do so much, especially for patients who have respiratory muscle problems, and it's underused, and I don't understand why. So that's why I'm passionate about it, because I think it should be, known everywhere, and everybody should be doing it.
Yes. Oh my goodness. As you're speaking, I'm like, oh my God, I have so many questions. Because I completely agree. And so I should also share, since we're talking about origin stories, the way I even heard about your company was through XPT, which, you know, as another company that's done some really great work, you know, certainly linked up with part of Laird Hamilton's kind of creation and understanding how to train the respiratory muscles, certainly as it relates to surfing, but also just extreme sports in general. And so heard about your product, about PN Medical's product from there, got one myself. And it's just a fascinating area, particularly for many people that are coming to Sleep as a Skill, are looking to one, improve the ability to both fall asleep and stay asleep. But then in addition to that, are also looking to often improve their overall health and well-being. And this area, this conversation around their respiratory rate as it relates, you know, their nocturnal respiratory rate and their HRV are a couple metrics that come up time and time again, and understanding the fact that we do have power over how these play out and the fact that we can actually make a difference in that is really news to many people. So I think maybe we could start at almost just 101 with you, helping to educate us how that the fact that this is even an option and you're not just kind of fixed a particular area, a particular rate, and what there is to do about that and what that looks like.
Right. Where to start? Okay.
Yes, so many things. I know. Sorry.
So many things. So breathing is a funny thing, you know, because we all do it all the time and it is autonomic. So it just happens when you sleep, you don't stop breathing. Good thing. However, you can also influence it. So you can consciously decide to slow down your breathing, to speed up your breathing, and to stop your breathing for a while. You can't do this with your heart rate. So that's kind of the cardiopulmonary system. So the lungs and the heart are really closely interacting. They're closely connected together, but you can only influence and regulate the breathing. But that then backfires to the heart because, for example, every time you breathe in, your heart rate speeds up. Every time you breathe out, your heart rate slows down. So mm-hmm. You can kind of effectively connect that. So the breathing muscles that you can control, the main breathing muscle is the diaphragm, and the diaphragm just kind of sits underneath your rib cage and it kind of separates your thoracic cavity from the abdominal cavity, so kind of the chest from the gut. And it really sits in there. It's dome-shaped and it sits in there like a big, you know, a bit like a thick skin in there. And when you inhale, it moves downwards into the abdomen, and that kind of really expands the, you know, the volume of the lung and extends the surface of the alveoli that kind of sit at the bottom of the lung. So they get a really big surface because this is where the gas exchange happens. So the oxygen goes in there, carbon dioxide goes out, and this is, you need a big surface for that. The bigger the surface, the more effective that is. And then when you exhale, the diaphragm moves up again and kind of pushes the air out. So that's the main breathing muscle. And when you do respiratory muscle training, this is the main muscle that you're training. Then you've got accessory muscles like the ones sitting alongside your ribs, and they kind of extend the rib cage when you inhale and kind of push it together again when you exhale together with your lungs. And then you've got the shoulder and neck muscles here, and also the laryngeal muscles, glottic muscles up here, and they are really important for swallowing and for speech. Mm. And all of this is kind of a muscle system that you're training by working against resistance. So when you use, you know, I've got the Breathe Fit version
yes,
here.
It's great.
A nice black and orange one. It generates slightly higher pressures than the breather that you have mm-hmm. because this is more targeted for athletes that are starting at a higher baseline. And the idea is that you set the resistance. On the inhale, it's from 1 to 6, and the exhale is from 1 to 5. And you just see how it feels for you. Usually you start on a 1 and 1. And then you breathe in for a few seconds, hold for a second, breathe out for a few seconds, and you can feel the resistance and you can feel your muscle working. And if it feels too easy, you increase the resistance. So in that way, you're kind of training your diaphragm and your other respiratory muscles like you would train your biceps with a weight. So it's the same idea, and your muscles do exactly the same thing. They get thicker, they get more powerful, you get more muscle fiber, you get more mitochondria in the muscles. So it's just like, you know, training any other muscle, and that makes your breathing more effective, you get more oxygen uptake, the entire system just, you improve your swallow, your speech function, everything. that is connected with it, as long as you use the right breathing technique. So it has to be done with diaphragmatic breathing. But by training this, you kind of optimize the entire system, and that reduces the workload of breathing. That's kind of the technical term. The work of breathing is reduced. So that means the breathing becomes easier for your body to do.
Mm. So why was it necessary for the creators of this to make something like an actual contraption to strengthen these muscles versus, you know, just sustained breath work on our own? What is the benefit to having kind of apparatus like this?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, the inventor of it, Peggy Nicholson, she really saw the gap because she was working with COPD patients, and there was dyspnea is the biggest and most burdensome symptom of COPD, so the breathlessness. The kind of, when you move, you get out of breath, so you don't want to move anymore because you're just scared you're getting out of breath, because breathlessness is dyspnea, really, is really associated with anxiety because you feel like you're suffocating just by walking. And there isn't much you can do it pharmacologically. You can use an inhaler that kind of gives you immediate relief, but it doesn't really solve the problem. And she really saw the gap, and she was a therapist. She was a respiratory therapist. She understood the system, and she just realized that you have to train that system. And she was just kind of playing around with it. And there were breathing exercises like pursed lips, lip breathing. They're still around, and you have the resistance there as well. But she just thought, if you follow the same principle as, you know, work doing the gym,
yes,
you might see the same effect. And she was just kind of playing around with it, and it did work. And, you know, 40 years ago, she invented the first version of the breather. Mm. And it is exactly the same effect. It is a gym for your lungs, and it follows the same principle. And you do exercise your respiratory muscles when you're exercising, when you're running or something,
sure,
because your respiratory muscles have to work harder than when you're just sitting on the couch. But it is a little bit, like, I always compare it to, you also exercise your legs when you're walking, but you exercise them completely different if you're squatting with a weight. When you're just walking, when you're just using them, you're not actually gaining muscle mass. You're just using them, so you're keeping them active. It's the same with the respiratory muscles. Of course, you're keeping them active. You're keeping them more active when you're exercising. But to train them in isolation, like you do when you're using the breather, you can only do this when you actually put a workload on the muscle to make them stronger and to make them bigger and to make them more effective.
Mm. So there's two camps of people, and kind of speaks to the two different products. So the white one of maybe particularly beneficial to people that might be dealing with some pre-existing conditions. So they're starting in that bucket. And then the black one is more to our athletes and looking to do this for kind of optimal health and well-being. So would you make the argument in your opinion of what you know of this area of the respiratory system that it would make sense for virtually all of us on the planet to be doing some work in this area?
Essentially, yes, if you haven't done it before, because I haven't really worked with a group of people that hasn't benefited. You know, when I started with the company, I was like, right, I need to try this because, you know, I need to know what I'm doing.
Right, right.
And at the time, I did consider myself fairly fit. I had a baby like the year before, so I wasn't at my fittest, but I was still kind of doing okay. I had recovered. I started running again. I was actually training for my first and last triathlon. It's only a short one, but I was training for that. And I hadn't cycled much. I've never had a road bike before. I haven't cycled much before. So I thought, when I try and start using the breather, I had established a half-hour training route on my bike. And I used the breather for 4 weeks. And in those 4 weeks, I think I trained maybe once or twice because I just didn't get around to doing it. And of this 30-minute route, it shaved off 2 minutes just by using that. I was like, I like that. I didn't have to train hard. I just had to train smarter, you know?
So, wow.
That convinced me. And yeah, so I think if you hadn't done this, the evidence is out there. They did research on Olympic rowers.
Okay.
And even they saw an increase in performance. And, you know, they are built like a boat, you know, they're just like a steam engine. They really can ventilate, and they still saw an increase just because they haven't trained those muscles in isolation with a weight on them or with a resistance against them.
Mm. So I have so many questions. So of course, you know, given the title of this podcast being Sleep is a Skill, we're looking to help all of us really understand the fact that there's so much that can go into getting great sleep night after night. Could you help us bridge the gap a bit more in how this, you know, the concern, like taking the time, we all got busy schedules, right? And yet making the argument that investing in training our respiratory system, how this could play out in increase and improve results in the area of our sleep?
Sure. There are two different ways to bridge that, because one of them is, of course, how breathing regulates the parasympathetic nervous system, vagal nerve, vagal tone, heart rate variability. That's the one aspect that really improves your sleep. And the other aspect is that people who have severe sleep problems, such as sleep apnea, they usually have them, that's usually associated with dysfunctional breathing and often respiratory muscle impairment or respiratory muscle weakness. So they're kind of two different aspects, how you ideally you combine the two. So breathing, and let's start with the first part, with the vagal nerve, HRV, how that is connected. So as I said before, the kind of the breathing, the heart and the cardiac tone, they are really connected. And because you kind of can regulate the speed of your heartbeat, so to speak, of your heart. So one way to look at this and to measure this is heart rate variability. So this is one of the parameters, you know, usually when you look at your parameters that are important for your sleep, I'm using the BioStrap, which is a wearable that is kind of really focuses on the sleep.
Yes.
And measures the respiratory rate, the heart rate, the oxygen saturation, and the heart rate variability overnight, as well as movement and other things. And the heart rate variability, that measures the resting heart rate variability. So the heart rate variability is essentially the distance between two heartbeats. And that is different between each pair of heartbeats. So it's longer, it's shorter, it's longer, it's shorter. And the more variable that is, the better. Because the more variable that is, that means the reactivity to stressors is bigger, and also the recovery rate. So that means the heartbeat, or that part of the PNS is just more active, is activated, and just reacts quicker and kind of recovers from the stresses of the day overnight. And this is also that you see, if you monitor your heart rate variability overnight, it's usually quite bad when you go to sleep. And then especially if you've really looked at your sleep hygiene, your sleep latency is good, which means it hasn't taken you too long to fall asleep. You've hopefully went to bed before midnight. You've done everything right. You haven't drunk alcohol before you went to bed, and all of the whatever suits you. You can find this out if you monitor yourself. You can see that it kind of recovers overnight, and is the most recovery rate I usually get kind of is in the early hours of the morning after if you've had a restful sleep. You hopefully haven't woken up during the night, and then it kind of recovers overnight, and you can really see what affects the heart rate variability is if you've had stress at night, if you've been working late, if you've been up at midnight, sitting in front of the screen, you know, blue light, for example, all these kind of poor sleep hygiene. I'm wearing my...
Perfect. I love it.
Because it is late at night here. Just to kind of reduce that. And this is where the breathing comes in as well, because if your respiratory system is more efficient, then you get away with breathing slower overnight, essentially. And kind of that improves the recovery rate overnight. You've got the oxygen uptake is optimized, and your body doesn't have to worry about that. It can just concentrate on recovering. It doesn't have to work on keeping you alive. Just because it's the system is optimized.
You know, or maybe this is just a longer conversation, but when it's the reverse. So, you know, I'll have certain clients that will come in and they'll have their HRV actually dips throughout the night, and it gets increasingly lower throughout the course of the night, or they have a lot of variability in their respiratory rate. Are there certain things that you really take note of and that stand out for you, and that maybe can also be reversed through the work of training this area?
Yeah, I mean, this is when you don't recover, that means your sympathetic nervous system didn't really switch off overnight. That means, you know, your fight or flight response was so switched on that it just, the vagus nerve just didn't make it, didn't break through, because it's always a bit of a balance. And breathing, you've got breathing techniques, but the diaphragmatic breathing, you know, that's, and the long exhales, these are the two things that are really important to activate the vagus nerve. And if you activate that, then because the vagus nerve actually is connected to the lungs, is connected to the heart, to the liver, to the gut. And if that's active, it kind of regenerates the whole system. The vagus nerve can actually, you know, kind of widen the airways in the lungs. It can actively, you know, work on the heart muscle to slow that down. So it does, when you slow down your breathing, you activate the vagus nerve, but the vagus nerve then promotes relaxation. So kind of by relaxing, you activate it. By activating, you relax even more. So you just have to kind of break the cycle of being in the sympathetic nervous system, in the stress response, and just you can do this by the breathing, by just kind of getting your breathing under control, because you can control it. And we're working with breathing coaches as well to kind of you can change the pattern of your breathing. Sometimes it's actually a good idea to speed up your breathing first, for example, by circular breathing, to just kind of get into a rapid breathing cycle that kind of catches up with what your body is experiencing, because it is in a stress response, and then do this for a few minutes and then kind of calm it down to go to a nice long inhale, long exhale, and then a pause to kind of this triangle shape to kind of really slow it down and then activate the parasympathetic nervous system and kind of tone everything down. And you have to get into the habit of doing that. Kind of, it might not work on the first time. So it's kind of, but all of, you know, the research for this has gone over centuries, you know.
Yes.
Yoga, meditation, you know, mindfulness, this is all not new. This has been all been practiced for centuries. And this is because this is your way of controlling that part of your nervous system.
So interesting. So, because what I find cool about this is, you know, often to your point, this, it's not late breaking news. Okay. Like breathing will really help for less. And yet often, particularly a lot of the people that might come to sleep as a skill are looking, it's almost a new way in at an old idea. And yet also this idea of being able to maybe with velocity tap into a way of training that might have, you know, taken many, many years to get to a particular point. And yet if we, same way that we improve, you know, our fitness by adding in heavy weights or what have you, these additive measures can make a difference at different points. And that was the other thing I liked about this breather was that the affordability of it, the ease of use, all the things, it has that app that comes with it to help kind of guide you and make it just really like a no-brainer. Because I have seen certainly other breathers on the market doing great things, and you know, it's a bit more of an investment as well. So I think the idea that this could be something for the masses is really exciting.
Yeah.
And so I guess the other question that I have is, what does something like this look like? So for instance, I have people right now that are concerned about COVID, about their immune system. I do have a lot of people, you know, over the age of 60 that are dealing with, you know, it can occur as if now they've got a bunch of things they're dealing with. Now maybe melatonin is going down. They're, you know, they're reaching into different seasons of their life that they're already kind of up against some barriers to getting great sleep. And now they have these other things to consider about their health and well-being. And now the idea that we could actually bring some level of control into this area is really exciting. So I'm wondering if you could share a bit more about what you see as how this could fit into our lives. You know, we've got yoga, we've got these other options that are very in vogue, and yet there's this new way of doing this. So what would this paint the picture of how this could look for people?
Okay, there are kind of different aspects of it as well. One of them is stress and immunity. Yeah. The other one is pulmonary hygiene. And the third one is prevention. So I'm going to try to cover all three of these.
Okay.
So stress and immunity, as you said, you know, yoga helps as well. This only takes 5 minutes a day. You know, that's another advantage of it, you know.
Yes.
I love doing yoga. I find it hard to find the time for it every day. So,
same.
Okay, with kind of COVID around, you know, it is a very, very scary thing. Breathing really has an impact on your immunity. And this is via stress. If you're stressed, if you're sympathetic nervous system is firing, that's really detrimental to your immune system, because essentially your body is preparing for battle. So everything else in your body is switched off. Your body is not looking after itself. It's just preparing to either run or fight. You're consuming energy, your muscles are ready to go if your immune system is not working properly. So by being mindful of your breathing, doing breathing exercises. And this is what the breather is really good for as well. You just, you know, you sit down for 5 minutes and you only concentrate on your breathing. You know, you're doing diaphragmatic breathing And you instill a habit. You instill a habit of good breathing, and you've got a prop to not forget about it. You know, that's kind of a good thing as well.
Yes.
It's a strengthening effect as well, but it's just kind of, for these 5 minutes, that's all you're doing. And that's really important. And just by controlling your breathing, proper breathing and diaphragmatic breathing, that actually, it activates the immune system. The diaphragm is also a little bit of an endocrine system. So it actually excretes things like interleukins or things that help your immune system and that are necessary. The other thing that you do by strengthening your respiratory muscle system is that you promote your pulmonary hygiene. So the airways in your lungs, they are lined with a layer of mucus. And we always think of mucus as something that's really disgusting and we have to get rid of.
Right.
That's true if there is excess mucus, but a thin layer of mucus, that's really, really important because this is where your antibodies are, your T lymphocytes are, everything that you need, because this is the space where the virus enters your body. It's a respiratory pathogen. You breathe it in, it goes into your lungs, and then it goes into your body. So this layer in your lungs is your first line, along with the epithelium in your nose, you know. Breathe your nose, always really important during respiratory pathogen season, flu season. Always nose breathing because that belongs to that local immune system as well. So, but this is the first encounter with your body. So if your mucus layer there is in tip-top shape, that's a good start. So by having strong respiratory muscles, should you have excess mucus because, I don't know, you're allergic, you've got asthma, you've got COPD, you just kind of have mucus buildup, then you've got strong cough muscles because your respiratory muscle training has been effective. You're able to kind of cough it out effectively. You get rid of that and you just keep your pulmonary hygiene in good shape. So that's really important kind of in the prevention part. And the other thing that has been exciting for us, I mean, because we're working on it, it was fairly clear to us, but it's, you know, we're biased. We can't say this. We're selling a device. So,
yes.
But there has been a really nice statement paper that came out last week and that was published in the American Journal of Medicine by a physiotherapist, actually. He suggested that it would actually be a really good idea for anybody who's high risk, and high risk includes anybody who's elderly, as you said, but also anybody who has respiratory comorbidities or heart failure or hypertension, obesity, these are all risk factors to catch COVID, for example. And everybody who is at high risk, the author suggested, should be doing respiratory muscle training. And this is in prevention if they should get the virus and it should kind of get worse, because most people still are asymptomatic or have very mild symptoms. And then a minority of people do actually develop symptoms, and a further minority actually develop severe symptoms. So if you're in this group that if you develop symptoms, then it gets to the point where the work of breathing becomes harder and harder. And if that balance tips, that your lungs actually can't cope with the ventilatory demand anymore. So your body says, breathe harder, breathe harder, breathe harder, because you've got mucus in there, you've got inflammation in there, the system's not working anymore, and the body tells you to breathe harder. And if you've got stronger respiratory muscles, you can follow this demand for longer before the balance tips. If the balance tips, then you've got respiratory distress. If it further tips, you're in respiratory failure. So that's kind of the worst case scenario. And their line of argumentation was just the stronger your baseline is, the longer you can resist and let your body try to recover in the meantime. So they really recommended that anybody who belongs to a risk group to kind of strengthen the system beforehand, to just kind of be prepared essentially, and then hope for the best.
Okay. So, and out of this, like in this conversation, we've already established, of course, we're looking for optimal living and what have you. So really all people could really benefit from training this area. And yet there are particular groups that could be really benefited by taking this on, you know, like that more at-risk group as it relates to corona. And then in the conversation of sleep, certainly in your opinion, would you say that most people that are dealing with anywhere in the spectrum of sleep apnea from, you know, mild to severe, that this would make a lot of sense for them to invest some time in?
With sleep apnea, if you're in the severe stages and you need CPAP,
yes,
it's still a good idea, but
sure,
it might be too late. So it's better to catch it early here, because if you've got strong respiratory muscles, you really increase the airway stability. And this is usually what happens, you know, even if you're snoring or something, that usually means that your airways are collapsing during the night. And then it comes to the apnea where your breathing actually stops intermittently. So just kind of giving your body the stability and just kind of a better ability to keep the airways open overnight. For those people, it has, and there's been a really nice paper from a researcher in Australia, and she really nicely showed that by doing respiratory muscle training, people who had sleep apnea, they had fewer awakenings every night, they had less apnea, they had also a fewer limb movements overnight, and just, you know, a lot more restful sleep. And a side effect that she showed, which was really exciting at the time because she was the first one who showed this, this has since been confirmed in other studies, is that respiratory muscle training also reduces the blood pressure.
Mm.
That for sleep, I mean, that's also, you know, if your blood pressure is nice and low, that is a huge thing again.
Yeah, because that is one of these, you know, so for people that maybe are not looking at their sleep regularly with some of the sleep tech on the market. And even for people that are looking at their stats, you know, certainly there's just such an interesting correlation, even just in the effects of how you feel that next morning. If you've taken a exceptionally long time for your heart rate to lower and stabilize and get to that, like the lowest point right before you wake up, you likely will feel how that feels, which is not always the best. Because, you know, there are also people that will come to sleep as a skill and they're sleeping, you know, the numbers on paper, it looks fine. You know, they're getting a decent time duration, not a crazy amount of wake ups, but they just can't understand why they feel like crap when they wake up. And often that can be one of those things to look at. And of course, as you're pointing to, if we're seeing changes in our heart rate, then, you know, the flip side of that is that HRV impact. You know, we recently had a HRV expert on the podcast, and he made the very, you know, just with such conviction that if you are looking to impact your HRV, it is really impossible to do that without training and getting connected to the diaphragm. So the correlation for many of us, because so many people, okay, I want to get this crazy athletic level HRV readouts and yet not interested in taking such a maybe esoteric stances, breath work, something like that can land is not, you know, particularly effective or what have you for many people. And I think you are providing for us the science on how that is maybe not accurate, right?
Maybe a bit of a shortcut. You know, I think exercising, you know, is a great idea. But I just read the quote today saying, you know, I don't get around to doing 30 minutes of exercise today, but I do get around to doing 5 minutes of breather. And it is like that, you know, and also we have also seen this on athletes who are injured, who are suddenly kind of sedentary for however. I mean, they usually get back into training fairly quickly, depending on the injury, but this is something you can always do. You know, it's always, you can always at least, and then if you get back into training, you're starting from a different baseline. Your diaphragm, because you get diaphragm atrophy from not using it, like you get from any other muscle. You know, just breathing at rest does not train your diaphragm properly. You need to put either go exercise, or even better, you know, put a workload on it and work against resistance. Otherwise, you get atrophy. This is the evidence for people going into major surgery, you know, and going into the ICU. In 6 days on mechanical ventilation, you lose 30% of your diaphragm muscle mass. You know, if you're planning a surgery, this is another area where respiratory muscle training is immensely important, just because you then start from a different baseline, because you will still have the muscle loss, but you're starting from a different baseline, and then you can start again straight afterwards to build it up again.
Wow. Okay. And I'll try to be cognizant of your time because I know it's late for you. I guess a couple quick questions. When you see, because I certainly get the sense from you too, that you are mindful of some of your stats, and what is concerning to you when you see certain amounts of, so when we look at our respiratory rate, just understanding the amount of breaths that we're taking per minute while we're sleeping, when we see people on the upper end of that spectrum, they're breathing, you know, 18, 19, 20 times a minute while they're sleeping. Does that indicate for you just a clear stance that they could really take the time to do this? Is there something else lurking?
You kind of always have to see it a little bit together with the other parameters if you can, you know. If I see that my heart rate variability is, you know, not improving overnight and I've got this, then I might actually have an infection lurking around the corner, or I might actually be getting ill, or I am really, really stressed. but it is an indicator, you know, in this just in isolation, if the respiratory rate doesn't go down, it is an indicator that the system isn't working properly. So it might also be that then your oxygen saturation is not right, because it means your body is telling you, we need more oxygen, we need more oxygen, breathe harder. And training your respiratory muscles in this scenario would be a really good idea to see how that can help.
Okay.
If that still doesn't help, then you really have to look at the overall picture and sort out anything else that might be a problem there.
Okay. Okay. And then, you know, just for the last part, because I was very confused when I first saw in the XPT video, they pulled out one of these. They had the black one like you. So seeing it was just so foreign to me. I was like, what is this thing? So then really just it's as simple as just you put in and out throughout a series of things. You got your app and you kind of just go through that process. And it's as simple as that 5 minutes. And is there, because, you know, we'll mention in the app different timing of the day. Is there a thought process around the response for that?
You should train twice a day on at least 6 days a week. And the idea is just because it is a muscle that you're training, you also need to let the diaphragm rest and recover in between.
Yes.
You know? So ideally do it mornings and evenings. Work the diaphragm hard, but especially if you have COPD or heart failure or something, don't work it too hard.
Yes.
That also counts for if you're an athlete and you've just had a competition where you've really kind of pushed hard, give it a rest day, you know, just do respiratory muscle training the next day, because you can actually fatigue the diaphragm and you can fatigue the respiratory muscles, and you don't want to do that. You know, fatigue muscles, not a good idea. You can overtrain it. It is unlikely, but you can do it. So ideally, you know, twice a day, and you can work them fairly hard. So you can actually, the setting should be, you do 2 or 3 sets of 10 breaths. Mm-hmm. And it should be kind of 70% of your maximum effort. So it should feel quite hard, but you should be able to finish a set of 10 and then be able to do 2 or 3 more before you run out of breath.
And I've already got clients that have now ordered these and they've asked me about feeling faint after. Is that something that you see people kind of work through as they're improving? At what point is that a problem, or is that really a nice sign that they're stressing that area? What do you see?
We see this a lot when people have not done this before. It's just, it is basically just a rush of oxygen to the head, really. You know, it is a little bit of a natural high, so to speak. Enjoy it. It should go away after the first few times. It's just because your diaphragm is not used to working so hard, and it suddenly is. So it's just the first few times you feel lightheaded. If that's the case, you know, after a set of 10 breaths, just, you know, rest until it's subsided again and then do the next set. Or finish this session for now and then start again in the evening. Within a few days, it should go away. If it doesn't go away, then you need to see your physician, but that is rare.
So. Yeah, got that. Okay. Wow. So good. So how can people learn more about the breather, about what this process would look like, the app, all of the things?
We do have a really good website, pnmedical.com. We've got loads of videos there for how to use your breather, how to clean your breather. That is really important.
Mm.
How to do correct diaphragmatic breathing. How to also for therapists, how to kind of show the breather to your patients. Now we've got just put up a new video on telehealth. How do you do that? We're also going to keep putting up new information, especially around COVID. You know, people are really concerned. Can I use my breather? Should I use my breather? So just look on the website. There's loads of stuff there. You can always get in touch with a clinician, get in touch with me. So yeah, we're there to also, the other thing is we've put up, we just started Breather University. So we've put up webinars on how to implement, how to basically target respiratory muscle weakness. So that's the kind of underlying problem that we're treating with the breather, and how to kind of document it, how to apply it also with loads of practical advice, but also all the science behind it. So we do provide lots and lots of resources. Anything you want to know is there. Anything that's not there, just send us an email and we'll get back to you.
So cool. That's awesome. I didn't realize about the university. That's very exciting.
Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. Yeah. And in my experience with, you know, cause like I said, I saw this video and XPT went right over Google, and then, you know, so this is how my brain works. I'm like, oh shoot, it's not on Amazon. It's going to take longer. And yet it was so fast. And then the customer service was amazing. So I got it so quickly, and it was just really, really seamless. So I had a great experience.
We're a small team. We're really tightly knit team. Everybody yeah. knows each other. And, you know, if we've got a care department, if they don't know the question, they ask me. If I don't know it, I ask our CMO. He's a pulmonologist. So we've got all the bases covered and we really work well together. So, you know, there's no delay anywhere. It is a bit like a family.
Yeah, that's really what it felt like. It was very cool. Well, so grateful to be connected with your family and really grateful that you're able to take the time. It's really been really beneficial and I'm excited to get this information out. So I think it's always important, but particularly important right now. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really hope kind of maybe I could have helped a little bit and support good
Oh,
sleep.
Absolutely. This is so informative. I had to restrain myself from asking you more questions. Really
we can
great.
Meet again.
Yeah, maybe we'll do a part two. Exactly. Okay, very cool. All right. Well, thank you so much again.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Sleep is a Skill podcast, the number one podcast for people who want to take their sleep skills to the next level. Every Monday, I send out something that I call Molly's Monday Obsessions, containing everything that I'm obsessing over in the world of sleep. Head on over to sleepisaskill.com to sign up.